Our final case of the day is United States against Mr. Chicasso.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The District Court admitted into evidence unsworn testimony of two government witnesses in violation of the requirement that all testimony given at trial be sworn.
Yeah, but you know, the problem with your argument is that it wouldn't have done your client any good to have a witness recalled and asked whether she would repeat her testimony under oath. Because what would she say? She said, no, I was lying since I wasn't under oath. They're not going to say that, obviously. So all it would do, really, since it's 99.99% sure that what she would say was, oh, what I said was absolute truth and I would repeat it under oath and so on. That, of course, would hurt your client. And that's why his lawyer in the district, well, I don't know if that was you or someone else, said, no, let's pretend it didn't happen. That was a sensible tactical decision by the defendant's lawyer.
There are two points in response, Your Honor. One is returning the witness for an oath is the proper remedy for the defect of unsworn testimony.
There's no duty on the part of lawyers to enforce the rules of evidence. You only object to something if you think it'll hurt you. So there wasn't any way in which which the defendant was going to be helped by having the witness recalled and asked whether she would have given the same testimony if she'd been under oath. That would just hurt him.
In fact, if the lawyer had done that, you would be here now making an ineffective assistance argument, saying that the lawyer had done something that could only help the prosecutor.
Your Honors, when a fundamental basic protection, basic trial protection
no,
was involved...
No, that's all wrong. Because, look, when someone pleads guilty, he waives all sorts of constitutional rights. And no one says, oh, that's a terrible thing for a lawyer to allow a defendant to waive all these precious constitutional rights. Lawyers do all that. So similarly, with the oath thing, that's waivable.
But, Your Honor, if I may... When someone waives the right to be tried by a jury or the right to counsel, a defendant personally and knowingly waives such a right.
No, but look, this is not the kind of thing where you can. I mean, this is a technical, you know, lawyer's type tactical decision. It's not something where a client is going to be able to have a useful contribution to make.
We disagree, Your Honor. That this is a basic tactical legal decision that is suitable only for the lawyer to make and to waive.
Look, I agree with you that this was a little sloppy. I don't think the district judge should have done it the way he did. But there doesn't appear to be any reasonable view of this evidence here and this issue to support the contention that if he would have turned to the defendant and said, is that all right with you, what your lawyer just said, the defendant would have said anything other than it's fine with me.
But Your Honor, when basic fairness of the trial, when basic trial rights are involved, there is no need to assess the injury that would have followed. If a basic fundamental right was violated.
Well, why is this such a basic fundamental right?
Because
it's a mistake that was made and it was easily correctable. I don't think the judge did it the right way to correct it, but nevertheless, it happened.
It
the
is
lawyer
an essential
said it's
element.
Okay. Let's not bring the witness back and put him on again in front of the
But
jury.
This is an essential element, Your Honor, of the right to confront and cross-examine the witness. And without
yes, exactly.
the witness,
but that's your problem. Suppose when this witness had finished testifying,
right.
the judge says to defense counsel, "Your witness," and defense counsel says, "No questions, Your Honor." Does the defendant have to be consulted before the lawyer can say no questions, Your Honor? The answer is no. I mean, that's perfectly well established. And you tell us that the oath is important because it facilitates cross-examination, that it's part of the right of cross-examination.
Right.
And we know that the lawyer can waive cross-examination without getting the defendant's assent on the record. Does it not follow from that the lawyer can waive the oath without getting the defendant's assent on the record?
But we presume that when there's witnesses testifying against a defendant, the defendant is in the courtroom and can acquiesce in the lawyer's decision. In this case,
it doesn't make trial decisions about what questions to ask of the witness. The lawyer decides those things. Certainly the defendant's not going to be asked by the court, do you agree with your lawyer's decision not to question? And in fact, even if the defendant disagrees, the lawyer will still make the decision, so I don't understand why this is any different.
Well, we believe that in fundamental trial rights, the court should make sure that the defendant has acquiesced or has consented to certain decisions.
The defendant won't. That won't be done. The judge will not, at this stage of the trial, turn to the defendant and say, do you agree with the strategy not to ask any questions of witness X? It won't happen. It's not constitutionally required. And in fact, we've issued opinions discouraging judges from doing any such thing.
We believe, Your Honor, that if another fundamental trial right, such as the right to enter a plea, for example, would have been involved, it would have been appropriate for a judge to make sure the defendant understands what he or she is entering as a plea.
It's true, because that has big consequences. This doesn't.
This is a more ministerial act, isn't it?
It's trial management, one would think.
We do believe, however, Your Honors, that as this court has required in the past, that the Constitution requires that every effort be made in a criminal case to make sure the defendant doesn't unknowingly waive important basic trial protections.
But look, you say this, the oath, is important to cross-examination. And I say it is an established rule that the lawyer, rather than the defendant personally, makes the decision about whether and how to cross-examine a witness. The question I'm asking is, does it not follow logically from that proposition that whether and how to insist on an oath also is the lawyer's decision to make?
We don't believe that it does, Your Honor.
Why not?
With all due respect. Because Without the oath, the entire fundamental right to be tried or to confront a witness is toothless. The right to be to confront a witness is ineffective if that witness had not been sworn. And secondly, there's an issue of a second unidentified witness.
Well, you have a backup. You know, you can always complain about ineffective assistance if you think there's been prejudicial error by your lawyer, which of course there wasn't here. So.
But we don't have to get that far,
this
Your Honor.
This was completely harmless.
But there is also the issue of a second unsworn witness, Your Honor, in this case. And because the court presented the matter as already resolved.
And who was that witness?
To this day, we don't know, Your Honor. The district court.
Why don't you just go to the transcript and you find some witness that wasn't sworn? What the district court seemed to say is the witness was not sworn properly, so I swore the witness in, which is not to say that there was an unsworn witness. It was to say that when the judge noticed that something hadn't happened, the judge made sure it was done.
But it's not clear from the transcript, and the court didn't go to the length to find out whether, by the time the defect was discovered, whether that witness had already started to give testimony or not, and whether that witness had been sworn as to the truthfulness, which is an important element of this remedy, of the already given testimony. I also would like to get to the second argument is at sentencing, the district court granted an 8-level enhancement despite the fact that the government failed to meet its burden of proving by the preponderance of evidence that the enhancement should apply. Merely asserting the defendant's offense put unqualified people on the road is insufficient to support the enhancement. This court has required in the past showing more than the defendant's conduct merely makes it possible to cause injury. If defendant's offense merely makes the injury possible, then the risk is too slight to justify the enhancement. The cases in which the enhancement was granted and on which the government relies included trial evidence that linked the charged offense with the actual risk of serious injury. The district court in this case, however, did not find, and based on the presented evidence, could not have found the existence of risk, but it simply concluded that the enhancement was justified. The evidence in this record, therefore, is insufficient to support the enhancements. If there are no other questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Collins.
Good morning. May it please the court.
I want to pick up on the issue.
How did this happen that the witnesses weren't sworn? I was confused about that. Seems like a strange omission.
Your Honor, let me say two things. First, there was only one witness in which this irregularity took place. It involved a woman who was 9 months pregnant. I was trial counsel for the matter. I think the fact that her pregnancy existed was not a matter of record, but I want to share with you, Judge, because you've asked why this happened. She was 9 months pregnant. She was due any day. We asked at a recess if she'd be allowed to take the witness chair so that she did not have to walk in the presence of the jury and take the stand. We came back late from a break. We rolled in, and no one noticed the judge. It was an oversight on my part. It was an oversight on the district court's part. When we found out about it, we brought it to the district court's attention, and we tried to deal with it the best we could.
How did you find out about it?
The witness's counsel contacted me a few days after her appearance and let me know that she did not recall being sworn. So I then checked with the court reporter who was present that day. She checked her notes, got back to me, and indicated that she had no record in her notes of the witness being sworn. I immediately brought to the attention of the district court and informed defense counsel. It's an irregularity, Judge. It obviously shouldn't have happened, but it only happened as to one witness. On the issue of the second witness and the allegation that's been made by the appellant, on page 19 of the government's brief, we have cited each instance in the record where the government's witnesses, other than this one, were sworn. So there is no second witness.
Well, transcripts ordinarily don't transcribe the oath. They'll just simply say, witness X was called and sworn, and then you go right into the questions and answers.
That's absolutely correct, Judge. And what I'm referring to is the citations in the record are that exact statement, that the witness was sworn. I don't think this happened a second time. The record doesn't bear out that it happened a second time. So this is really just one simple irregularity, which defense counsel waived. I think as to the second issue that the appellant has raised as to the enhancement, there was just the allegation that there was no trial evidence relating to this. There was just an argument made at sentencing. The record does not bear out that allegation as well. The trial evidence was replete with testimony concerning the corruption of the entire licensing process. There was testimony concerning the cheating on written tests, which tested an applicant's familiarity with a vehicle, including its safety aspects. There was also testimony concerning the road skills test and the manner in which this defendant overpaid a third-party examiner to essentially pass his applicants.
You find that kind of thing going on in Wisconsin. I had expected it to be only in Chicago.
Well, Judge,
I object to that.
Standards are falling.
Well, Judge, it certainly did happen. It's that the defendant corrupted the process, and I think the enhancement was properly found on the trial evidence. It was replete with the corruption that was there. Unless there are other questions from Your Honors.
What are we supposed to think about this risk of death or injury business? This is a two-level increase, is it?
It's an eight-level, Judge. Essentially, it takes whatever the defendant was at and raises him up to 14. In this case, the defendant was at 6. He was raised to 14 because of the enhancement. So in this case, it became an eight-level enhancement. By itself, it adds 2 levels, or it brings the person up to 14.
I'm sorry. Say that again. It no matter where you start, you go up to 14 if you've created a risk of...
If you were less than 14, and if you started above 14, then you go up 2 levels. Is that correct understanding?
That's correct. That's exactly correct. And I think it's there for this very situation.
And for white collar, is that...
Well, when the fraudulent conduct maybe doesn't involve a particular loss figure as this conduct involved, but it's nonetheless creating a risk of injury.
But does it have to be a big risk, or can it be a trivial risk, or what?
Well, I think that's going to bear out by a case-by-case basis, but
That's not very helpful. I mean, suppose it's a pure financial fraud, and it's directed against elderly people, and the government argues elderly people are frail and probably someone could have a heart attack when he found out that his life savings had been stolen by the defendant. Does that do it?
I don't think the government would make that argument,
Why,
Judge.
Why not?
I think that does get to an extreme where you're talking about just simple possibility. I think that the guideline goes
well,
beyond.
Well, is it more here? I mean, is there a history? We do, of course, have the truck scandals in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But is there some body of learning about how people who get driver's license who shouldn't cause lethal accidents?
Well, I think there's two things, Judge. First, in trial itself, the government called an individual from the Department of Transportation up in Wisconsin, Terry Ewing. He talked about the testing process in place and just what is tested.
Did he provide any data about accident rates?
Well, we didn't get into data, Judge, but I don't think that...
Well, that's a real problem.
Okay,
determine whether there is risk. Let me put this a different way. If you study all the people who got their licenses via this fraud, do they have accident rates elevated over the norm?
I haven't reviewed that type of data, but I would suggest there's authority that talks about the fact that when it comes to certain things...
No, but this is so pathetic. This is a parody of legalism, right? Where you have actually a factual question. How serious is the risk of death or... You know, serious accident because people have cheated on the exam, on the driver's exam. That's a factual question. But instead of anybody looking at the facts, they look at authority, legal authority, which is not fact-based, but just rhetoric.
Well, I'm surprised I didn't hear you say anything about the truck scandal in Illinois that a driver driving in Wisconsin with one of those fraudulently issued licenses had a horrific accident and killed the whole family in a car.
I'm very aware of that because I prosecuted that individual, Judge. I'm very aware of that situation. And I think that we pick up the newspaper all too often and see that very situation. It's because of the fact that these terrible accidents are so common that a judge does not need to get into the sophisticated analysis.
That's the question. The question is not whether they're common, but whether the risk is elevated. Then we figure out by how much the risk is elevated, and then we can ask the question whether that change in risk satisfies the legal standard, whatever that is.
Well, I think on this we have two couple things here, Judge. We have individual cases. We also
this
have
is not
the
a,
scale.
These are not truck people, right?
Yes, Judge. This is commercial driver's license. These are truck drivers. These are people that get behind. And Terry Ewing talked about the types of vehicles that this testing process related to. It included the hauling of hazardous materials.
It's easy to get all the data you need just from looking at their insurance policies because their insurance policies and rates will change as they have accidents. And it's a large body. It's a large enough group of people that one could study it statistically.
That might be the case, Judge. I think that sometimes you can also look at individual cases, and we have one.
But the basic problem I share my brother Posner's concern is that lawyers prefer talk. And the guidelines seem to call for knowledge rather than talk.
I also agree with that, though.
Judge, I would submit that the district court heard quite a bit of evidence on what was in place here, why this process was in place, what it was supposed to protect against, and how it was evaded. There was a situation person who was...
Surely you're not suggesting that all government policies achieve their end. Governments regulate the price of electricity, saying that they will do that to reduce electricity prices. And then when people study it, they discover that, in fact, the regulatory system increases electricity prices. For all I know, the Wisconsin system compliance with the Wisconsin system increases the accident rate or is indifferent to it. Another example of government programs that feed the bureaucracy and have no effect on the world.
I would leave the panel then with one thought, Judge, which is a case that I cited.
How many of Babul's clients were trying to get truck licenses?
There were hundreds, Judge.
They were all trying to get truck licenses?
All CDL applicants, Judge, all trying to get commercial driver's licenses.
So there were hundreds.
There were. I know that we had testimony regarding at least 240 CDL applicants.
140.
And just to address the last question, one of the decisions that the government cited in its brief talked about the fact that when you have the potential for catastrophic injury, as there is when you have a truck driver who causes an accident, and Your Honor has talked about one of those situations, it relates very much to the aircraft manufacturer who had 18 parts out of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of parts that were called into question. And the court there looked at that and said, well, when the risk is so catastrophic, even one or two instances is enough to support this enhancement. And here we talked about, in our brief, one individual who reeked of alcohol, but nonetheless was brought up by this defendant
and
taken through the process.
Sorry to keep pursuing this truck issue, but are commercial driver's licenses just for truck drivers, or what about people who drive limousines?
I'm not familiar with the limousine requirement up in Wisconsin. I know as it related to these applicants.
Well, it's described as a commercial driver's license, and I'm asking you, is that mean a license to drive a truck, or does it mean any kind of commercial driving, like a taxi or a limousine or
school bus?
Judge, I'm not sure if CDLs in Wisconsin allow for limousine drivers, but I know in this case, when it came to the applicants in this case, all of them were seeking to be truck drivers because all of them were tested.
All 240.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Chicasso?
Your Honor, showing evidence that 240 or fewer or more people applied for CDLs is not enough to support the enhancement in this case. Guideline 2B1.1. I'm sorry?
Do you collect data on the driving histories of these people?
We don't, Your Honor, but what is necessary for this to support this this enhancement is the showing of actual risk. And the fact that they apply for licenses.
If you have 240 people driving trucks without a license, that's probably a risk. I don't know how to quantify it, but right?
But the government...
Because a truck is extremely,
the government
potentially
produced,
extremely dangerous, obviously. Yeah.
Right, Your Honor, but the government produced no evidence that any of these people went on to have access to trucks or that they were otherwise unqualified in their home countries from which they came and that they would actually go on the road and create a risk of serious bodily injury. That was the original concern of this court.
You say we don't know how many of them actually got jobs driving trucks?
That's exactly it, Your Honor. The government never brought such evidence to the court, before the district court. I see that my time is up, unless you have any further questions, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Chikosov, we appreciate your willingness and that of your law firm to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been both to the client and the court. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.